Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about a recent trip we took and illustrating it along the way with lots of fun audio clips. We'll be talking about getting into the hotel, some great outdoorsy activities we did, and for the high-tech item about how to book a trip like this using web tools. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip is, you know, you may think that an airport is a little bit overwhelming, and in previous shows we've talked about all the help that you can get, but here's an example of an airport where they actually help everybody, even if you can't see. We flew into Denver because we were visiting our son, and we figured if we wanted to see him during the winter months, we had to go there because, by gum, he was not leaving. Not all that great snow. So we flew into Denver, and the Denver airport, they have this little tram that you take to get from the terminal to the gates, and they've got this great voice and all of these audio cues telling you and helping you, whether it's subliminal or you're actually focused on it, what's going to happen next. So we turned on our recorder when we were on the tram partway to the B gates.
The doors are closing. Please keep clear and hold on for departure to all B gates. Hold on, please. We are approaching the station for all B gates. Exit here for all B gates. The doors are closing. This train is departing. Board here for all C gates.
Board here for all A gates. Terminal, transportation, and baggage claim.
So now the very end bit, we had gotten off the tram and we were waiting at the platform, and fortunately, we had a lot of time to kill before the plane because we stood there for quite a while recording these digital voices. But you'll notice that the train we were on that went from A to B to C, that had a woman's voice. And the other one that went from C to B to A and ground transportation, that had a man's voice. So that you could tell which tram was talking to you.
If I heard a little kid's voice, I probably would have been worried.
I don't know. There was that situation where a little kid was flying a plane.
True. I noticed they had similar things when I traveled in Japan a few years ago, that although I couldn't understand the announcements, they did have different voices for the different trains, different sounds of musical tones for arrivals and departures. They actually had different textures on the ground for standing at different locations relative to the platform and waiting places and things like that. So more modern airports are getting better at doing things like this and making it a little bit easier to get around, making the cues more understandable for people.
And we've seen similar things for pedestrians in Toronto. They've got the chirps on the lights when it's safe to cross in the one direction at a major corner, and they'll make sure that you can tell which way it's safe to cross from which way the chirps go.
Right, so make use of those audio cues when you're traveling.
Okay, we got there. We were in Colorado. It was the middle of February. But our son is out there. He's working at the front desk of one of the resort hotels in Keystone, Colorado.
And we let him check us in.
So you want to check in?
I need a credit card from one of you.
Use your own.
No, I have debit cards.
You're not paying for us?
So how was the trip?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah?
Mom didn't like driving over the mountain.
No?
No, we needed
you. Which mountain?
Continental Divide.
The uphills were okay. I wasn't so crazy about the downhill.
All right. Need your initial next to your date of departure, if it's correct.
Uh-huh.
You can see your package looks correct and initial. And read that and sign.
Oh, I have to read it? Well, let's see.
Some people do. Usually if they do, they say, I'm a lawyer.
Well, we're scientists. We read the things also.
And then some people say, I can't read that. What's it say? I'm like, I haven't read it.
If they can't read it, they should listen to Viewpoints.
How many keys do you want?
3. You want to come visit?
The snow hasn't melted yet.
You go on your dash.
Okay.
That's your room.
Okay.
And then behind the keys, you have your charge slip for the room. And if you bring it down to the bar each night between 5 and 6 p.m., you each get a free glass of house wine or a Rolling Rock draft.
Whoa!
And you have a suite with a mountain view on the top floor.
Wow. Thank you.
I know, right?
That is cool.
Yeah. Okay.
You did well for us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So he found us a really sweet suite. We had a great time in Keystone. And what we're going to play now is actually a tour of our next hotel room on the trip.
Well, this is also important. It shows you when we check into a hotel room, the first thing we do is Nancy will give me a complete tour of the room. So I know where everything is, so I'm not smashing into things, breaking my head or my shins, and that I can find everything within the room. She also shows me, by the way, where all the fire exits are closest to our door to our room. But anyway, here is how we go through a hotel room when we usually check in.
Right, and you might think that, you know, most hotel rooms are pretty much the same. There's a bed, there's a little table next to the bed, there's a bathroom. But, you know, some things, even though you know what's in the room, it's nice to know where it is. In particular, the tissue box and the garbage can, they're always somewhere different.
Here we are at our hotel room.
We're sticking the card in the door slot. Light is green. Okay.
Whoops.
We're going to get through the door. On the right.
Yes.
Is the closet.
Closet.
On the left is the bathroom.
Bathroom.
Which actually has some lights.
Okay.
Here's the sink.
Sink.
There's tissues.
Yeah.
Garbage is down here.
Okay.
Toilet.
Yeah.
Shower. The business end of the shower is near the toilet.
Yep. Ah, that must be the toilet. Okay.
Okay, now we are entering the bedroom.
Okay.
The bed is right here. You can have this side because it's closer to the bathroom.
Nice and soft. Thank
you. Watch your shins. There's a little puffy ottoman at the foot of the bed.
Found it. Okay.
Go past the bed.
Okay.
There's another little side table.
Okay, I can put my watch and stuff there.
There's a little sofa.
Ooh,
actually,
cozy.
A love seat. There's a little table you can whack your shins on.
That one would hurt. That's hard.
The windows are okay. Over here at this end.
Open the blinds. Okay.
Here's a little desk area.
Oh, nice desk.
Television with a bureau below it.
Okay, and some drawers. Okay.
For some reason, there's another desk.
Okay, well, there's two of us.
Then we're back at the entrance.
I find that very useful when we walk into a new room, and that's a great help for me, just showing me around the room the first time.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
So this week's focus topic is what we actually did for fun on this trip. We told you we started in the mountains of Colorado. We went from there to Las Vegas. Believe it or not, you can get some great bargains in Las Vegas. And then we went on to Southern California because really the whole point besides seeing our sun was to warm up because February in Rochester isn't so warm.
And the other point of showing some of these clips of what we did is you might normally think that some of these traveling things or some of the activities we're involved in might be difficult or maybe not possible if you had some visual problems. But just to show you that if you have the right attitude, you're willing to give things a shot, there are many things that are pretty accessible and can be done. You can have a great deal of fun if you just give them a shot.
And sometimes you need to adapt how you do it. Goodness knows we do, but if with a little adaptation, you can have lots of fun, it's worth the adaptation. So the first clip we have is from Colorado. As we said, we were visiting our son in the mountains, and there's snow like you wouldn't believe out there. I think they get an average of 300 inches a year, and this was an above average year, so there was plenty of snow. Now, we used to cross-country ski when Pete just had very low vision. I would wear a bright jacket, and he could follow me on the cross-country skis, but as his vision deteriorated, that got less successful, shall we say, although we persisted probably longer than sensible. But this year we bought ourselves some snowshoes, and that was a lot easier for the two of us to stay connected.
And a lot more fun.
Well, right.
Since it was less to think about and all. So we went snowshoeing in Colorado.
We decided to try snowshoeing. There's Pete.
Here I am on my tether, my little bungee cord with the hook.
There's some scenery, which is to die for.
And now mush!
And the tether is something that I just knocked together out of some rope and a bungee cord, and I tie this thing around my waist or hook the bungee cord onto the day pack, and he's just a couple feet behind me whenever the trail gets too narrow for us to hold hands. Of course, it's more fun to hold hands, but when the trail isn't wide enough, that doesn't work so hot.
Yeah, that worked pretty well, the tether. That we just experimented with that this year.
Right. It turns out it's still possible for him to get close enough behind me that he can step on the back of my snowshoe and then the two of us wind up face first in the snow. But we laughed, and the people watching this commotion helped us up out of the snow, and everything was fine, and we just dusted off the snow and kept going.
And you have some snow angels when you're done.
That's right. So then we went to Las Vegas. Now, most people go to Las Vegas to gamble. We're not into gambling. We did gamble a little bit. Lost all $2.64 that we risked.
It was a tough loss.
It was. But there's some great hiking outside of Las Vegas, maybe a half an hour or an hour outside of town. So this is us hiking.
Okay, we're on the trail again, but this time we're in hiking boots. That's us. Oh, our shadows. There's some of the scenery.
And there's my Lecky. You can hear it tapping.
I can.
The Lecky, in case you're interested, is a metal pole that's adjustable in length that many skiers use. And I found this to be a very lightweight substitute for a cane, because the canes aren't all that sturdy in terms of supporting your weight. But so the Lecky can act both as a cane in terms of letting me know what is around on the terrain, and then also if I do lose my footing a little bit, it can give me a little bit more stability.
He used to use just a collapsible white cane with the bungee cords when we went out hiking, but there was one memorable trip when we were fording a stream and the bottom got stuck in the mud, and by the time it came out, it whacked into the top so hard that the whole thing got bent. And there we are in the middle of nowhere with a bent cane. And the next thing that happened was a group of Boy Scouts came along. One of them had the right tool and fixed the cane, and we were on our way, and so were they.
It was almost like a Monty Python movie with the Boy Scouts just all of a sudden showing up from the middle of nowhere.
That's right. But now he's got a Lecky that's intended for this purpose, and that is much more successful.
So that enables me to hike just about any place. We'll go up and down mountains. We happen to be in Red Rock Canyon during that clip.
But, you know, we go on hikes, and the Adirondacks, the terrain is a little bit more complicated because there's all these rocks and roots. So once we got out west, Pete got spoiled, and he keeps holding out for these western trails because there aren't rocks. Well, there are some rocks, not too many, but there aren't any roots because you're in the desert. But, you know, we get to the top of a mountain, and we're in the Adirondacks, and we're just as hot and sweaty and dirty as everybody else. And they'll figure out Pete's blind, and they'll say, "Why did you climb this mountain? You can't see the view." And, of course, more often than not, there's all fog and clouds, and they can't see anything either. I'm like, "Can you see the view?" They say, "No." I said, "Did you enjoy the hike?" "Well, yeah." Well, that's why he does it, because you don't really do the hike for the view. You do the hike for the experience, to be out in the woods and exert yourself and present yourself with a challenge and overcome the challenge and do it, and it's a lot of fun. So from Las Vegas, we headed towards San Diego, but of course there's a lot of stuff in between, and we actually spent a few days in Palm Springs, which was nice, but to get there we went through the Mojave Desert, where they have, among other things, the Kelso Sand Dunes.
This is what sneakers sound like, hiking on sand.
Walking through the Kelso Dunes of the Mojave Desert.
Sign said they occupy 45 square miles. Well, we got into really soft sand. You can't actually hear us walk here.
I can hear you walk.
It's quiet. Oh, this stuff is so powdery.
It really changed its texture after we got away from the parking lot.
Out of the regular desert.
What's really interesting about these different hikes is the different terrain. So the first one through the Red Rock Canyon in Las Vegas was very rocky and parts were steep and, you know, lots of hard surfaces. This stuff was just really like being on a beach and rolling up and down big dunes of sand. It was really interesting.
And once we get further into the dunes, it was like being inside of a container of baby powder. This stuff was so fine and so powdery. But as we said, they were dunes, and so some of them went up and some of them went down, and I convinced Pete that it would be safe to run down this dune.
Keep coming.
Here we come.
Safe, but still a little scary running and not knowing exactly where you're going. But we had fun doing it.
Fortunately, he trusts me. I've never led him astray. If I tell him it's safe, it's safe. He's never run into a tree at the bottom.
And this program is a testament to the fact that I'm still alive.
So then we got to San Diego, where we found another place to hike.
Okay, we're hiking in Mission Trails Park. It's sandy here.
We just went past all the switchbacks.
Oh, we're still in the middle of the switchbacks,
Pete. Right?
There's lots more.
Oh, don't tell me.
Lumpy.
Okay.
Sandy.
Thank you.
Extremely skinny.
Thank you.
Down is to the left.
Thank you.
Big step down.
Thank you. Got it. Gotcha.
Another step down.
Yep.
Skinny, down is to the right.
Thank you.
Sandy.
I could hear the river way down there to the right.
You notice on a hike like that, this one had very steep sides to it as we went up the mountain with a lot of switchbacks. And Nancy was very specific to me about some of the big falls off to the side, steps that I had to go over and things like that. So there's a lot of communication between us that way. One interesting thing about a hike like this is that everyone else who hikes with me seems to be afraid for me because they can see how steep and how far the fall off is. But somehow I don't really get a sense of that because I just hear what's locally around me and I just feel like I'm walking along some path just following behind somebody.
Well, there was that one time in Colorado Springs a year or two ago when the trails were really tame, and we came up to this one area called Balancing Rock or something like that. And there's this big rock that's maybe 10 or 15 feet tall, but you can clamber up on it, and it's flat, and it's wide, and, you know, bigger than a classroom. And then above that, there's this other rock that's kind of tippy, and everybody likes to see it, but it's right near the road.
Right, and all the people underneath. And I found that one of the more frightening experiences that I've been on when hiking. I mean, this was one of the less dangerous things that I did in terms of, you know, where you could fall and what was around and all. But I was afraid, I think, just because I could hear all the people in the cars immediately below me. So I had a sense of height. Whereas on many of these hikes, when we're going up mountains, you really don't because you're in the middle of the mountain.
And no matter how long it takes us to get to the top, he has no idea that we're above the bottom.
Right. But talking of sounds, there are lots of ways other than just these hiking and tactile ways to enjoy different surroundings.
We went to the San Diego Zoo, which is just so much fun. And as soon as you get in the entrance to the grounds, the first thing you come to is their aviary.
Oh, they have some neat sounds in this bird aviary here. Let's see who's making this racket.
Oh my gosh, this is gorgeous.
What's that?
I don't know. It's got a big tuft on its head. It's all slate blue. It's like twice the size of a pigeon, but it walks just like one.
Even with just your ears, you can enjoy a lot of that and just envision being in the middle of this big place full of birds and trees.
And if any of you know what kind of bird that was and you want to tell us by email or telephone, we'll replay the clip and give you the credit for identifying the bird.
Now, some of the sounds were a little bit scarier.
Is this the jaguar?
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess not everybody liked hearing that jaguar. You could hear the little baby crying in the background. So another way of enjoying the zoo is, besides all these sounds and looking for those things, is as we walk through, Nancy can, of course, see all the signs posted about all these animals and what's going on, but then she reads them to me.
Did you know, like people, not all animals are physically perfect. It is the policy of the San Diego Zoo to allow these individuals to live normal lives in appropriate social groups, to care for and treat these animals with the same respect and dignity afforded the, quote, perfect specimen, unquote. And, you know, I read a lot of signs to Pete, but after a while, my throat gets dry, whatever. But there's other ways to get the information besides having your companion read to you. At many of these museums and at this zoo and other places we go, they'll have volunteer docents who turn out to be quite knowledgeable.
She had the first panda cub to survive in the United States longer than 4 days. We had the first panda cub to be born on the west coast of the United States. And now she is 11 years old and she lives in China at the breeding facility. She has had 3 sets of twins and 2 single births.
So these docents are great, you know, and they'll just keep talking for as long as you want to listen, and you learn all sorts of interesting stuff.
And then once you get tired of walking and hiking all around, the zoo at San Diego also had a tram that you could hop on that had a guided tour on the tram ride.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the San Diego Zoo. My name is Marina, and I'll be your tour guide for the next 35 minutes. We're going to cover about 50% of the zoo grounds, and if you brought your zoo maps with you, go ahead and open them up. That way you can follow along with me and see how we are more than a zoo with our education programs, conservation efforts, and our sanctuaries we have for the endangered species. On our left is the Bactrian camel. We also have dromedaries. They're in the elephant odyssey area. We also have our gazelles.
As you can see, there are lots of ways to enjoy travel in terms of doing some of it yourself and hiking around. Use your ears to find some particular things that sound good.
We had a great trip. So turning to this week's high-tech item, how did we actually book this trip?
Good question.
The web is a wonderful resource, and I always start by going to the various trip search sites, and there are a lot of them. Orbitz, Travelocity, Expedia, Hotels.com. Some of them actually are composites, so if you go to Mobissimo, that'll give you the option of doing a search through multiple web search sites, and you can pretty much scope out where the hotels are, what your choices might be relative to one another. But from there, once I've scoped it out and I know, you know, that I want to be in more or less this part of town and these are the kinds of hotels that are here, I always go to the individual hotel's website. And that's actually got some benefits to it. First of all, if you have a AAA card or an AARP card or, you know, some other discount card, you can actually often get a better rate directly through the hotel's website than you can through the search engines. The other thing is that the hotels are wise to this. They know they need to put their most competitive prices on the search sites because they're competing against everybody else. So sometimes they'll actually reduce the amenities that they provide. So if you get the hotel room reserved through the individual hotel site, maybe you'll get free internet, or you'll get the resort fee waived. Whereas if you just get it through the search tool, you'll have to pay the resort fee and or for wireless internet, maybe a parking fee, who knows what. So we've learned some of this just from experience, some of it from talking to our son, because he sees the kinds of reservations people get.
The other thing that you've often found through making the reservations directly that way is that the cancellation policies are often better. When you make these reservations over the web with Orbitz or Travelocity, you often don't have as nearly as good of a cancellation policy as you do when you make it directly, right?
Mm-hmm. That is true, yeah. And the cancellation policy to us is very important because we have a tendency to change our minds. Or, you know, maybe you find out about a better bargain even to the same hotel. And on this particular trip, we stayed in four different places, and two of the hotels I rebooked a few weeks later after I'd already booked them because I found out I could get exactly the same room at a better rate. Well, why not do that? And then oftentimes, you know, if you get to the hotel's website and they tell you, well, we don't have a room with a king-size bed available, but you really wanted to book through them because of the cancellation policy, but the search engine tool says they do have a room with a king-size bed or whatever the issue is, you know, you can get on the phone and call them up and say, well, okay, so this is the room I want, and they offer you a rate, and you say, well, geez, online I got this other rate, and now they don't really want to book it online because they have to pay fees to somebody, so they'll often work with you, and it actually works quite nicely that way. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about Braille. We'll be talking about print Braille books that you can share with children and grandchildren, Braille printers, transcription programs, refreshable Braille displays, and just all sorts of information about Braille. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333. We'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.